Today is the 20th day of January. Welcome. Welcome to the Daily Audio Bible. I am Brian. Welcome back. Welcome back around the global campfire today. It's great to be here with you. Grateful. Practicing gratitude. Grateful to have this place to be. Grateful to be in it. And grateful to be in it with you. As we continue to navigate the thoughts, words, and deeds of our lives and the days of this week. So we'll do what we do. Step forward by picking up exactly where we left off yesterday, which leads us back into the book of Genesis. We are now in the story of the great-grandchildren of Abraham. We are in the story of Jacob's children, Jacob's name having been changed to Israel. We are in the story of the children of Israel. And in particular, we are in the story of one of those children's lives, the story of Joseph, who has been trafficked by his own brothers, sold into slavery, is no longer in his homeland, has become a slave in Egypt, has been thrown into a dungeon, but fates are about to change considerably. Pharaoh has had a dream nobody can interpret. Joseph is in a dungeon. Very quickly he's been called for because he can interpret dreams. So here's this guy, long you can imagine him. He's a young man, well-built, good-looking, but he's got a growth of beard, and he's dirty, he's living in a dungeon, and quickly he's supposed to leave the dungeon and go before the Pharaoh of Egypt. So he's gotten a bath, he's gotten a shave, he's like, you talk about culture shock. He's about to go before the Pharaoh of Egypt. Genesis 41, 17 through 42. So Pharaoh told Joseph, "In my dream I was standing on the bank of the Nile River, and all of a sudden seven healthy, plump, beautiful cows emerged from the Nile and began to graze among the reeds that lined the bank. Just then seven other cows emerged after them, poor, ugly, and appearing very gaunt in their flesh. I've never seen anything as ugly as those cows anywhere in the entire land of Egypt. But those thin, gaunt cows gobbled up the first seven healthy cows. Not only that," Pharaoh continued, "after they had finished devouring the cows, nobody could tell that they had gobbled them up, because they were just as ugly as before. Then I woke up. Later, I also dreamed about seven plump, fruit-filled ears of grain that grew up out of a single stalk. All of a sudden, seven thin, withered ears of grain, scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. But the thin ears gobbled up the seven good ears. I told all this to my advisors, but nobody was able to explain it to me." "Pharaoh's dreams are identical," Joseph replied. "God has told Pharaoh what he is getting ready to do. The seven healthy cows represent 7 years, as do the seven healthy ears. The dreams are identical. The seven gaunt cows that arose after the healthy cows are 7 years, as are the seven gaunt ears scorched by the east wind. There will be 7 years of famine. So the message that I have for Pharaoh is that God is telling Pharaoh what he is getting ready to do. Be advised that 7 years of phenomenal abundance are coming throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine are ahead, during which all of the abundance will be forgotten throughout the land of Egypt. The famine will ravage the land so severely that there will be no surplus in the land due to the coming famine, because it will be very severe." Now, since Pharaoh had that dream twice, it means that this event has been scheduled by God, and God will bring it to pass very soon. Therefore, let Pharaoh select a wise, discerning person to place in charge over the land of Egypt. Also, let Pharaoh immediately proceed to appoint supervisors over the land of Egypt, who will collect 1/5 of its agricultural production during the coming 7 years of abundance. Let them collect all the food during the coming fruitful years, store up the grain in cities governed by Pharaoh's authority, and place it under guard. Let the food be kept in reserve to feed the land for the 7 years of famine that will occur throughout Egypt, so that the people don't die during the famine. What Joseph proposed pleased Pharaoh and all of his advisors. So Pharaoh asked his servants, "Can we find anyone else like this? Someone in whom the Spirit of God lives?" "Since God has revealed all of this to you," Pharaoh told Joseph, "there is no one so wise and discerning as you. So you are to be appointed in charge over my palace, and all of my people are to do whatever you command them to do. Only the throne will have greater authority than you." "Look," Pharaoh confirmed to Joseph, "I've put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh removed his signet ring from his hand, placed it on Joseph's hand, and had him clothed in fine linen garments, and placed a gold chain around his neck. Then he provided him with a chariot as his second in command, outfitted with a group of people who shouted out in front of him, "Bow your knees!" And that's how Pharaoh set Joseph over the entire land of Egypt. Pharaoh also told Joseph, "I'm still Pharaoh, but without your permission, nobody in all of the land of Egypt will so much as lift up their hands or take a step." Pharaoh also changed Joseph's name to Zephanath-Paneah and gave Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, to him as his wife. And that's how Joseph gained authority over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he began to serve Pharaoh, king of Egypt, by traveling throughout the land of Egypt, independent from Pharaoh's oversight. While bumper crops grew during the 7 abundant years, Joseph collected the surplus food throughout the land of Egypt, storing food in cities. That is, he gathered the food from fields that surrounded every city and stored it there. Joseph stored up so much grain, like sand on the seashore, in so much abundance, that he stopped keeping records because it was proving to be impossible to measure how much they were gathering. Before the years of famine arrived, Joseph fathered 2 sons with Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn son Manasseh because he said, "God has made me forget all of my hard life and my father's house." He named his second son Ephraim because he said, "God has made me fruitful in the land of my troubles." As soon as the 7 years of abundance throughout the land of Egypt ended, the 7 years of famine started, just as Joseph had predicted. It was an international famine, but there was food everywhere throughout the land of Egypt. Eventually, the land of Egypt began to feel the effects of the famine, so the people cried out to Pharaoh for food. "Go see Joseph," Pharaoh announced to all the Egyptians, "and do whatever he tells you to do." Joseph opened all of the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians because the famine was beginning to be severe throughout the land of Egypt. In addition, all of the surrounding nations came to Joseph to buy grain from Egypt because the famine had become severe throughout the world. Eventually, Jacob observed that there was grain in Egypt, so he asked his sons, "Why do you keep on staring at one another? Pay attention now. I've heard that there is grain in Egypt, so go down there and buy some grain for us so we can live instead of dying." So 10 of Joseph's brothers left to buy grain from Egypt. Jacob would not send Joseph's brother Benjamin to accompany them because he was saying, "I'm afraid that he'll come to some kind of harm." Israel's sons went in a caravan that included others who were going to Egypt to buy grain, because the famine pervaded the land of Canaan too. Meanwhile, Joseph continued to be ruler over the land, in charge of selling to everyone in the land. Joseph's brothers appeared and bowed down to him, face down. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he knew who they were, but he remained disguised and asked them gruffly, "Where are you from?" "From the land of Canaan," they replied. "We're here to buy food." But Joseph had already recognized his brothers, even though they had not recognized him. Furthermore, Joseph remembered the dreams that he had about them. So he accused them. "You're spies. You've come here to spy on our undefended territories." "No, Your Majesty," they replied. "Your servants have come here to buy food. We're all sons of a common father. We're honest men, Your Majesty. We're not spies." But Joseph kept insisting, "It's just as I've said. You've come here to spy on our unguarded territories." "But Your Majesty," they pleaded, "your servants include 12 brothers, the sons of a common father back in the land of Canaan. Please, our youngest brother remains with our father, and the other one is no longer alive." "I'm right," Joseph insisted. "Just as I said, you're spies. So here's how we'll test you. You can bet the life of Pharaoh that you're not leaving here until your youngest brother comes here. One of you is to be sent back so he can get your brother, while the rest of you remain in custody. That way, we'll test whether or not you're telling the truth. If you're not, as surely as the Pharaoh lives, you're spies." Then Joseph locked them all together in prison for 3 days. Matthew 13, 24 through 46. He presented another parable to them. "The kingdom from heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. While people were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. When the crop came up and bore grain, the weeds appeared too. The owner's servants came and asked him, 'Master, you sowed good seed in your field, didn't you? Then where did these weeds come from?' He told them, 'An enemy did this.' The servants asked him, 'Do you want us to go and pull them out?' He said, 'No, if you pull out the weeds, you might pull out the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at the harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and tie them in bundles for burning, but bring the wheat into my barn.' He presented another parable to them, saying, 'The kingdom from heaven is like a mustard seed that a man took and planted in his field. Although it is the smallest of all the seeds, when it is fully grown, it is larger than the garden plants and becomes a tree, and the birds in the sky come and nest in its branches.' He told them another parable. 'The kingdom from heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed with 3 measures of flour until all of it was leavened.' Jesus told the crowds all these things in parables. He did not tell them anything without using a parable. This was to fulfill what was declared by the prophet when he said, 'I will open my mouth to speak in parables. I will declare what has been hidden since the creation of the world.' Then Jesus left the crowds and went into the house. His disciples came to him and asked, 'Explain to us the parable about the weeds in the field.' He answered, 'The person who sowed good seed is the Son of Man, while the field is the world. The good seed are those who belong to the kingdom, while the weeds are those who belong to the evil one. The enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels. Just as weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather from his kingdom everything that causes others to sin, and those who practice lawlessness, and they will throw them into a blazing furnace. In that place, there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the Father's kingdom. Let the person who has ears listen. The kingdom from heaven is like treasure hidden in a field that a man found and hid. In his excitement, he went and sold everything he had and bought that field. Again, the kingdom from heaven is like a merchant searching for fine pearls. When he found a very valuable pearl, he went and sold everything he had and bought it. Psalm 18, 1 through 15. To the director, by the servant of the Lord David, who spoke the words of this song to the Lord, on the day when the Lord delivered him from the hands of all his enemies, and from the hand of Saul. Gratitude for victory. He said, I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my stronghold in whom I take refuge, my shield, the glory of my salvation, and my high tower. I cried out to the Lord, who is worthy to be praised, and I was delivered from my enemies. The cords of death entangled me. The rivers of Belial made me afraid. The cords of Sheol surrounded me. The snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I cried to the Lord. To my God, I cried for help. From his temple, he heard my voice. My cry reached his ears. The world shook and trembled. The foundations of the mountains quaked. They shook because he was angry. In his anger, smoke poured out of his nostrils and consuming fire from his mouth. Coals were lit from it. He bent the sky and descended, and darkness was under his feet. He rode upon a cherub and flew. He soared upon the wings of the wind. He made darkness his hiding place. His canopy surrounding him was dark waters and thick clouds. The brightness before him scattered the thick clouds with hailstones and flashes of fire. Then the Lord thundered in the heavens, and the Most High sounded aloud, calling for hailstones and flashes of fire. He shot his arrows and scattered them. With many lightning bolts, he frightened them. Then the channels of the sea could be seen, and the foundations of the earth were uncovered because of your rebuke, Lord, because of the blast from the breath of your nostrils. Proverbs 4, 1 through 6. Listen, children, to your father's instruction and pay attention in order to gain understanding. I give you sound teaching, so do not abandon my instruction. When I was a son to my father, not yet strong and an only son to my mother, he taught me and told me, let your heart fully embrace what I have to say. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget or turn aside from the words of my mouth. Do not abandon her, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. All right, we got some pretty big things going on, Old and New Testaments. So Joseph has quite a turn of fates. Brought from a dungeon before Pharaoh. Pharaoh tells his dreams. Joseph tells him it's beyond my power, but it's not beyond God's power. Well, let's not forget this is kind of a life and death situation. So Joseph has been brought from the dungeon before Pharaoh, but you know, the way he answers is going to determine his fate. But despite all that Joseph did go through, somehow he held on to hope. Somehow his devotion to God remained intact. And God did give him the interpretation of Pharaoh's dreams. The next 7 years will be a period of great prosperity. Afterward, there will be 7 years of great famine. So great that all the prosperity will be forgotten. And Joseph offered some strategic planning ideas for Pharaoh to prepare for the future. And Pharaoh quickly appointed Joseph to implement the plan, and he became that fast, second in command, like over all of the land of Egypt, from dungeon to second in command over the entire land. So 7 years later, after Joseph had prepared Egypt for the hard times, the famine did hit. And it was so widespread that it affected the land of Joseph's family, his homeland, the land of Canaan. And before long, here are Joseph's brothers in need. And here they are, bowing before Joseph as he had dreamed so long ago. They didn't know who he was. He knew who they were. That's a story for tomorrow to begin to unfurl. And there are a lot of twists and turns. This is a highly dramatic story, Joseph's story. And it's important that we start seeing the long view here. Everything that happened to Joseph up to this point was completely unjust, completely unfair. He did nothing to deserve any of it. And so, overwhelming sorrow and consuming bitterness would be completely understandable. And we have to look at our own lives. I am reading this story this year, looking at my own life, encouraging you to look at your own life in your own circumstances, things that have come out of nowhere, blindsided you for no reason, you do not understand, where it feels completely unfair or completely unjust, and bitterness and overwhelming sadness or resentment, whatever, is completely an understandable reaction and a human emotion to these things. Holding on to the idea, at least the idea, the hope, the idea that this is, that there's a long view here. This is not the end of the story. It doesn't necessarily end this way. There is a long view, somehow holding on to the idea of hope, places us in the context of this story with Joseph. Somehow Joseph did not lose hope. And somehow Joseph indeed acknowledged the injustice but did not blame God. He somehow believed in some way, someday, maybe there was hope, that his current circumstances weren't the final chapter just before the end. So when we find ourselves in these long seasons where our faith is absolutely empty, it just barely even a memory, like it's bottomed out, it's been wrecked. It has been ruined. It has been shattered. This Joseph story serves as just a beacon, just like that little, tiny, faint, blinking red light far off in the distance, that little idea of hope. that there really is more going on, and that this is not the end of the story, and we just, in the darkness of the pain, keep moving toward that little blinking red beacon. Maybe indeed we will find it's not the end of the story. So let's hold on to hope today. And Matthew, really, really interesting the way we look at the parables of Jesus and the way that they get interpreted and then the way that they even get taught. Fascinating that Jesus is using these stories, these pictures, to describe what the kingdom of heaven is like. So let's look. I mean, he says a bunch of them today. Let's just look at them real quick. The kingdom of heaven can be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. And then while people were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among them. And so the servants come and ask him, what should we do about these weeds? And he says, an enemy did this. And the servants say, do you want us to go pull them up? And he's like, no, because you pull out the weeds, but you pull out the wheat with them. Let them grow together until the harvest, and then we'll separate them. So who is the man who sowed good seed in his field? Well, later on, Jesus gives a key. The person who sowed good seed is the Son of Man. While the field is the world, the good seed are those who belong to the kingdom. The weeds are those who belong to the evil one. So that's how that story goes. It's God planting the seed in the field. So that's kind of key to all of these things. The next parable he says is the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that a man took and planted in his field. And even though it's the smallest of seeds, it fully grows into a blossoming massive garden plant. The birds in the sky come and nest in its branches. Right? So God plants seed and it flourishes in his kingdom. He tells them another parable. The kingdom from heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed with 3 measures of flour until all of it was leavened. So in this case, this is a woman doing the action, but we have the same key. So yeast gets mixed in with dough, right, into flour. And what happens? It rises. And when all is said and done, you can't find the yeast. But you cannot deny the effect of the yeast. It completely changes the consistency of the loaf. This is where it gets interesting, because the last two parables in the passage that we read today usually get interpreted from the reverse. So Jesus says, the kingdom from heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field that a man found and hid. And in his excitement, he went and sold everything he had and bought that field. And usually that gets interpreted that, like, we find the gospel and we go sell we have to be willing to give up everything to go in pursuit of that. And yet in all these other parables, the man, the person taking the action in the parable is God. So the kingdom from heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field that a man found and hid. And in his excitement, he went and sold everything he had and bought the field. What if we are the treasure that he found and went and sold everything to get us? Because that is the story of the gospel. Again, Jesus says, the kingdom from heaven is like a merchant searching for fine pearls. And when he found a very valuable one, he went and sold everything he had and bought it. What if the key is true in all of these parables? The merchant is God, and we are the one he's looking for. And when he found us as valuable, he went and sold everything he had to get us. That is the story of the gospel. Man, it makes me weepy, especially if we contrast it to Joseph's story and our own story of feeling the unfairness or this, that trying to take a long view and hold on to some kind of hope that somehow God will come. Jesus is telling these stories to say, not only will he come, we're worth everything he has. That is beyond good news. That is unthinkably, unmeasurably, impossible good news. And so maybe that red beacon that's off in the distance, way in the darkness, maybe it just gets a little bit brighter today. As we hold on to hope and just keep going in that direction.
The sun outshines regret. Thank God for metaphors, 'cause it's cold here. It's so cold here. The glass is nearly empty, and there must be something more. We place our bets in darkness, and some die the day they're born, yeah. It's easier to spit on truth and just believe a lie, yeah.